Do not fiercely guard the little faith that has been left in the rubble. Come and be redeemed and be healed in the presence and promise of your God. And maybe you're like, I have pursued healing and more devastation came. Great, he's still king. He's still king and he knows your works. He knows you. Don't allow victimhood and self-preservation to become the guiding light for your life. Your emotions, your hurts are valid. They are real and no one will take them away from you. But don't let fixating on my own pain excuse me from a willing submission and service to the King. I'm expressive. Hey, good morning, Southeast. Let's do this thing. What's up, everybody online? Wherever where is for you, wherever you are, thanks for tuning in. You guys know that, like, this family goes far and wide, right? Like, we're not just like a couple people watching at home in Douglas County. We're like across the nation, and I'm pretty sure into several other nations. So everybody tuning in, what's up, online family? Also, real fast, I have to do this, but Anna, if you're watching this, you're getting married today. What are you doing watching this sermon right now? My friend Anna back in Texas is literally getting married, like, soon. And she's like, I'll watch while I'm getting ready. I'm like, it's your wedding day. Like, but also thanks. And I love you. I'm so proud of you. And I really wish I could be there, but I got to preach to my church. Okay. This morning we're going on in this Revelation series, and these letters have been crazy because you've heard just about every time, like, oh, there's so much I wish I could put into one message, but it's so tough. And that's because the things the Apostle John writes in these letters to the seven churches in Revelation, it's like trying to take all of the gold in Egypt and put it in your mailbox, right? So here we are again. Let's party. This morning, we're talking about the letter to the church in Philadelphia. Okay, I thought this would be hilarious. I just need you to know, for the sake of the integrity and wellness of our church, this has nothing to do with our production team. I made this on my phone. So erase their names, their credibility, their reputation, their resumes. They have nothing to do with this. I have everything to do with this. But boy, did I think this was funny late at night one night when I was preparing for this message. We're talking about the letter to the church in Philly, baby, Philadelphia. Not Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Philadelphia in Asia Minor. Okay, so let's get into this. I've got some opening contemplation for us, just something to sort of get the plane off the ground. It goes like this. When we stare face to face with devastation, hold fast. Remember God's goodness. If not his goodness, remember his greatness. If not his greatness, remember his name. For our identity is in his name. And what God establishes under his name by his power is forever secure. Amen. Now, of course, you guys know, we got to have a little bit of context. I don't know that I'm actually capable of walking you through like an academic marathon contextually for Philadelphia, but we're going to have a little, context hopscotch is sort of what we're going to do. There's a few things we got to understand about Philadelphia for this letter to make sense. Now, Philadelphia, first, is the city of brotherly love. That is what Philadelphia means, the city of brotherly love. And let's go ahead and read through the letter one time, and then we'll hit some more of that context hopscotch. So let's read through. To the angel of the church in Philadelphia write, the words of the Holy One, the true one, who has the key of David, who opens and no one will shut, who shuts and no one opens. I know your works. Behold, I've set before you an open door, which no one is able to shut. I know that you have but little power, and yet you've kept my word, and you've not denied my name. Behold, I'll make those of the synagogue of Satan who say that they're Jews and are not, but lie. Behold, I will make them come and bow down before your feet, and they will learn that I have loved you. Because you've kept my word about patient endurance, and go ahead and just lock that onto your brain. Because you've kept my word about patient endurance, I will keep you from the hour of trial that's coming on the whole world to try those who dwell on the earth. I'm coming soon. Hold fast to what you have so that no one may seize your crown. The one who conquers, I will make him a pillar in the temple of my God. Never shall he go out of it, and I will write on him the name of my God and the name of the city of my God, the New Jerusalem, which comes down from my God out of heaven, and my own new name. He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. Okay, context, right? This is a good time for a good map. Who wants to see another picture of Asia Minor? Me, pick me, I do. Okay, this is Asia Minor, which is modern day Turkey. This is right here, Philadelphia. It's the one that says Philadelphia. And if you look real closely over here in West Philadelphia, born and raised on the playground. You're singing it in your head. Is where I spend most of my days. We're chilling out, maxing, relaxing, all cooling. Don't let me dance. When a couple of guys who were up to no good I got in one little fight and said, you're moving with your auntie. And if thank you for that. This is a church I want to keep being part of. If you, for some reason, never watched Fresh Prince, I'm sorry you couldn't join us in that moment. Catch up. Show from the 90s. None of this has anything to do with anything. This has zero to do with theology, the gospel, just everything Will Smith. Okay, so Philadelphia is right here. We've gone through these letters. I think the only one left after today is Laodicea. So it's in Asia Minor. That's modern day Turkey. And if I were the Bishop Aaron Couch, I would be standing here right now, and this would be the moment I would say, come to Turkey with me. Like, this would be the moment I say, you come to Turkey with me and we'll go there. I'll show you. Well, I ain't never been to Turkey. All right? I'm from the South. And the only thing I've ever done is fry a turkey. So tell you what, I'll make a deal with you. Church, come November, why don't you come with me and fry a turkey? Hey, honestly, though, me and Kylie just moved into our house. We had a 15-month journey of living here without being in our house. And we just moved into our house. Woo! But it's like Christmas when you don't see your stuff for that long. And I had a beautiful reuniting with my three turkey fryers. I have three. I don't have one. I have three. Why? Because your boy can fry the heck out of some turkey. Wow, this is not a time for me to pitch a business for frying turkeys. Let's keep going. Okay. Now, you have this, right? They're in this Lycus River Valley is where these churches are. It's a very prominent trade route in Asia Minor. Philadelphia is essentially this like pass-through point. Imagine it like a truck stop town. Like, you got to go through it. Some good people there, but it's like a good truck stop town. And maybe you're from a town like that, like me. Like, I would say, if you say, Andrew, where are you from? I would say Dallas. Dallas, Texas is where I'm from. I have a little bit of history before Dallas, though. Like, I was raised in Dallas, but I'm from a little town called Sweetwater, Texas. Sweetwater, Texas is home of the world's largest rattlesnake roundup. Sweetwater, Texas is a truck stop town. That is where I'm technically from. There's like a Holiday Inn, a Taco Bell, and a Denny's. There's a little bit more than that. But anyway, it's that kind of vibe, right? It's like a pass-through point. Philadelphia is this city that was designed to be a missionary outpost for Hellenism. And if you have been around, you've heard that word, like Hellenistic culture. That is Greek culture. You can thank Alexander the Great for that. It's that Greek thinking, the Western worldview, which has influenced all of us in this room. The American worldview came from Hellenism. So Philadelphia is this outpost for Hellenism, right? Which is like, let's make the world Greece. Let's create this like-minded people with yourself at the center of it all. The reason is that Philadelphia was Philadelphia was this convergence of three major local people groups, and so it was supposed to become this doorway into the world around it with an intended strategy of getting people to adopt a Hellenistic culture. More overview on Philadelphia. Philadelphia was really known for like two major things. Can you guess? Number one, grapes. It's vineyards. Miles of beautiful vineyards only producing the finest wines. It was also known for, correct, did you say cheesecake? Cheesesteak. I want to make more jokes so bad. But there's a sermon I have to, it's not my fault, I'm sorry. Yeah. Grapes and cheesesteaks. Let's pray, I'm kidding. It's known for its vineyards. And also, you got it, for its earthquakes. Yes. I want to walk you through a timeline that's a pretty rough timeline for the city of Philadelphia. In 17 AD, this earthquake comes through and just levels the city. Everything is left in rubble. Pure devastation. Everything we've lived in, our lives, our comfort, our where we raise our families, our business, everything is leveled to the ground, and everybody in Philadelphia has to move outside of the city. Well, Emperor Tiberius comes in. This isn't so good. Your whole city's on the ground. Great. He gives them a stimulus package, so to speak. He gives them a bailout to help them rebuild their city. Right, he sees them in need. He gives them this stimulus package. Let's get this city rebuilt and thriving again. As they're rebuilding their city, they're about 7 years deep in reconstruction, in rebuilding, and in healing. In 24 AD, another earthquake comes in and completely levels the city. Wow. The people of Philadelphia live outside of their city for 20 years because of devastation, the devastation they faced. While they're and now they're trying to attempt to rebuild their city. So finally, in 37 AD, the city is rebuilt. They finish rebuilding. There's this massive party. There's this huge celebration. The emperor comes in. I don't know if they had confetti poppers back then, but whatever the Roman Greek equivalent of confetti poppers were, like, I don't even know. Falafel flops out. I don't know. That was so dumb. I'm so sorry. I don't know. Like, there's this big party. We just, 2 decades of living outside of our city, and now we're back, baby. We're back. We rebuilt. We've healed. After devastation, we've healed. Let's celebrate. In that celebration, the emperor's there, and they actually end up renaming the city to Neo Caesarea, which means Caesar's new city. So let me fast forward a little bit. And in 60 AD, the city is thriving. Everything is perfect. Everything is beautiful. Children are skipping and laughing. Yay, we love it here. Our city is anew. Just kidding. Another earthquake happens. A third earthquake in like less than 50 years completely destroys everything they know. Everything they just worked hard to heal through is completely leveled again. And at this time, there's a new emperor, Emperor Nero. And Nero ain't no hero. Nero does not show up to help them rebuild. There is no stimulus package. You got to stop for a minute. And for a city who has faced 3 rounds of devastation And then the ones in authority we thought we were supposed to trust don't show up for us, don't do something we thought they were gonna do. You've gotta sit with like understand there's this deep sense of betrayal happening in Philadelphia or in Neo Caesarea. Later down the line, the Flavians take over. And the Flavians do show up and they give the city a stimulus package again. They hook them up, so they begin to rebuild the city yet again. Through this, they actually end up renaming the city again. We're on name number 3, and they name the city Flavia. And I know what you're thinking. Isn't that the town that Guy Fieri is the mayor of? Nope, that's Flavortown. This is Flavia. That is a joke that my wife made to me the other day. And normally I steal her jokes, deliver them really well, and give her no credit. So ladies and gentlemen, my ghostwriter, Kylie Lahan. She was like, you need to make a Guy Fieri joke. Like, or Guy Fieri, no one knows how to say his last name. He is like a hero in our household though. We watch Guy's Grocery Games. We watch like Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. This also has zero to do with this message. The Flavians take over. They give them a stimulus package. They rebuild, they rename the city Flavia. Now, that's fine, I guess. Except in 96 AD, Emperor Domitian dies. If you've been around for the last several weeks, you've heard the name Domitian. Domitian is not a spotted dog. That's a Dalmatian. Domitian was an evil emperor. Not bad, evil, terrible, horrendous, atrocious. And in his atrocious reign as emperor, he was deemed so evil that when he died, everything associated with his name was mandated to be destroyed. Okay, great. That sounds noble. Except if your town's name is Flavia. Why? Because he was a Flavian. Not so good for a city that's already been destroyed time after time after time. And you're telling me now, because of who we're associated with, we're going to be destroyed again? So I don't know what happened. I don't know if there was like a town hall meeting. I don't know if somebody went out and like graffitied the sign in front of Philadelphia, but they renamed the city back to Philadelphia. Like, we've been Philadelphia this whole time. Never heard of Flavia. So they changed the name back to Philadelphia. Now, at that time, as if things couldn't get any better, a place that was known for their miles of beautiful vineyards, right? And that was like a main point of commerce for them. They have 75% of their vineyards ripped out of the ground and replaced with grain fields. Okay, except at that time when that happened, there was a drought. And if you ain't got no rain, you ain't got no grain. So not only did this thing that's like they're known for got ripped away and replaced with something else, now that can't even do its job. And then there was famine. Philadelphia cannot catch a break. The church and its people, it's one thing after another, and there's attempts for rebuilding. There's attempts for healing. One thing after another, after another, after another, they cannot catch a break. And imagine with me the depth of the turmoil, the identity issues you're having as a people. Having your life left in rubble over and over. Imagine being neglected by the authority that was supposed to care for you. Imagine changing what you call yourself multiple times. Maybe this isn't so far from what life has been like for you. In Philadelphia, there's this debilitating sense of insignificance. And maybe you are feeling that now, or maybe you have felt that. Let's talk survival, okay? Like what gets us through? What keeps us going, right? People can live 3 to 4 days without water. You can live almost 2 months without food. But there is no living without hope. And what's tough about this time period with Philadelphia is like, you know, I don't know if you've been around churches for a while. Maybe you grew up in church, you didn't go, and now you're back. I don't know what your church history and background is. But I do know that sometimes through the hardest seasons is when I've received the worst kind of Christian advice. Like, let's just, look, with me, we just keep it real. Keep it honest, right? Like, today we're going to get vulnerable. Vulnerability is hard because it's vulnerable. But seriously, sometimes in the worst moments we face are when loving people in good intention show up and say things like, oh, it's all good, man. Just trust God's timing. Hey, don't be sad. Have hope. God loves you. Like, I'm in the middle of devastation. And you're saying, cheer up, buttercup. Jesus has a plan. You ever want to choke out a church person? Put him down. Go back to the connections. That was zero parts pointed at anyone, just so that's said. I'm just saying, like, and usually too, like, let this just be said. Sometimes when we're the ones giving that advice, it's usually because we're uncomfortable because of someone else's discomfort, and we're trying to make ourselves feel better. Like, oh, don't feel this way. It's actually hard for me. That's not good. So you gotta understand, man, in this city at this time, resilience and hope are fairy tale virtues to those who have had to stare face to face with downfall, defeat, and betrayal. Their life has been leveled to rubble, literally and figuratively, and it seems like now it's becoming all they know. And we have to just put a bookmark in the story of Philadelphia and go back to James chapter 1. James writes something that is beautiful when it's read in a good season and really tough when it's read in a hard season. But it's something I feel like is so necessary for this morning. So it's deep breath. James writes in verse 2, chapter 1. It says, dear brothers and sisters, when troubles of any kind come your way, consider it an opportunity for great joy. Pause. That's tough. When troubles come your way, consider it an opportunity for great joy. Just so this is said, the rest of this message, don't hear something I didn't say. What I'm not telling you to do is get over it. God is good. So just shove it down and keep suppressing the hard things. No one is saying that. What I want us to do this morning is to step into our own brokenness, step into our own hurt, go into that pain that we probably try to avoid as often as possible. I just want us to stick our toes in the water of our own pain and attempt to see what God might say there. He says, consider it an opportunity for great joy. Why? For you know that when your faith is tested, your endurance has a chance to grow. Again, pause. When your faith is tested, when my faith is tested, and I'm afraid that too often there is this narrative that we take on that God is testing me and he's like being a mean bully. Like testing of God, the testing of my faith is everything that's wrong, inconvenient, and hard about my life must be God just picking on me. Church, like, God is not a mean sky bully. He's not this like man with a magnifying glass trying to burn you like we used to. Do you ever do that to the ants? Like, he's not just picking on you. The testing of faith is not God just going, let's see if this gets you. The testing of faith is that through the hardships of life, where will my faith remain? It's easy to start a faith walk. It is hard to continue walking a faith walk. Is my faith, the testing of faith is, who do I believe you to be when I don't want to believe at all? Who do I believe you to be when things are not good, when things are hard, when I don't understand? Can I trust that his ways are higher than my ways? It's not stifled down and suppressed hardship. It's amidst hardship, where is my faith? For you know that when your faith is tested, your endurance has a chance to grow. So let it grow. Let it happen. For when your endurance is fully developed, you will be perfect and complete, needing nothing. And if you need wisdom, ask him. Ask your generous God, and he will give it to you. He will not rebuke you for asking. But when you ask him, be sure that your faith is in God alone. Do not waver, for a person with divided loyalty is as unsettled as a wave of the sea that is blown and tossed by the wind. Divided loyalty, real quick, like making sure your faith is in God alone. I'm less worried about that state. Like we may hear that and go, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Make sure that you only believe in the one God, right? Like I'm not gonna believe in Muhammad. I'm not being tempted to be a Buddhist today. I'm less worried about that. And we're talking about divided loyalty. It's my loyalty split up between my own understanding and his understanding. Like usually the gods we follow are like comfort, finance, stability, like self-understanding, pride, ego, insecurity, that's really just wearing the mask of pride. Like make sure your faith is in him, not in my own self-preservation, survival mode, and victimhood. No one wants to take away or invalidate the pain you've been through. In fact, I think it's better when we all step into it and walk through it together. But is my faith system, are my roots rooted in the soil of self-preservation and survival mode? Victimhood. Or am I remembering who my King still is? We sang this, Christ is my firm foundation. Like, rain came, winds blew. My house was built on you. It is not built on my trauma. I do not build my faith on my pain. I do not build my faith on the things that were the hardest for me. My faith is built on you, firm foundation. Let's get back to the letter. Verse 7, to the angel of the church in Philadelphia, write the words, write this, the words of the Holy One, the true one, who has the key, who opens and no one shuts, who shuts and no one opens. I know your works. Behold, I have set before you an open door, which no one is able to shut. And let's just like do you have the mom? Maybe you are this mom. The don't slam the door mom. Don't you slam that door. The kids are coming in and out of the house. Don't you slam that door. I'm not going to kick the fire out of you. Like, jump on you like a chicken on a June bug. Like, you know. Maybe that's you, or maybe your mom was like, don't you slam that door. Why can't I slam the door? Well, because there's a real nice picture above the mantle. You slam that door, the picture might go crooked or fall off. Maybe you got that real nice front room, right? That living room that nobody lives in. The living room that with all the stuff no one's allowed to touch. Right? Like, don't you wear your shoes. Don't even look in that room. You're like, it's part of our house. No, it's not. It's mommy's happy place. Don't you even breathe in that room. So don't slam the door. Why? Because there's usually like a bookshelf or like a mantle or a china cabinet in there. And then if you slam that door, and you hear that glass, you know, like, oh, instant anxiety, instant like panic and fear and anger and rage, right? Here's the deal. I think that we do that with our faith system, especially when we've been through hard things. I think that through hard seasons, in good intention, we try to figure out who our God is, and we pick up little trinkets and beliefs and doctrinal faith and things like that that we put up on this shelf, and it becomes this like faith trophy case or this like little faith china cabinet. We go, this is what I believe about this, and this is how I believe about the church, and this is what I believe about generosity, and this is what I believe about the resurrection, and this, and we decorate this thing and we go, ah, yes, here it is. This is my faith. And then when anything gets too close to it, or anything moves too fast by it, or when the door opens and shuts, we freak out. We panic. I think that is what makes up rigid, stiff-necked church people. Why? Because there are people in this church, there are people across the nation who have been praying and believing for a mighty move of God. There are people, let's not even go nationwide. There are people in this room who are believing for revival to hit Douglas County, Colorado. Did you know a few weeks back, we had a national day of prayer and the mayor of Parker himself was believing for revival in our city. People, we want to see a move of God. Several in this room right now are like, we are overdue for another awakening. We are overdue for a major, notable, newsworthy moment. We are overdue for a Jesus revolution, right? Right? Oh, yeah, and you get that fire going, come on, let's go, revival, revival. Well, it's easy to want revival if you don't want to actually be part of revival. We can't ask for a move of God, and then whenever he moves, be upset about it. And what I mean is this. I think sometimes we're so busy protecting the bookshelf, protecting the belief cabinet, right? Like the China cabinet of my little faith system that I've made up over time. Who I believe God to be, who I believe the church to be. This is where a lot of naughty emails come out of. We get so skittish and anxious and fearful that when anything moves too fast by our beliefs, we call it evil. We call it the enemy. But what if it's God trying to move? He alone holds the key. And if he wants to open and close doors, he can do whatever he wants. And is it possible that some of the movement around us is making us uncomfortable and we're so quick to call it evil, but really it's the Lord trying to pull us out and trying to move? You know what? I think we're overdue for a good earthquake. I need to have earthquakes in my own beliefs. I, Andrew, need that. Why? Because my faith needs to be tested, not protected. You ought to have doubts. You ought to have questions. Wrestle with your faith. The best, most intimate moments between me and the Lord have been times where I've questioned everything I believe, or where somebody preached or taught something, or I heard something in a conversation that challenged everything I believed up until then. Well, guess what you get to do? Instead of trying to fight and argue, wrestle with it. I want my faith to not be this tight little thing that I'm so scared of. I don't want to be so rigid and uptight trying to protect my faith. I want my faith to be malleable. I want it to be refinable, to be able to be sharpened, right? It's really easy to pray, Lord, refine me. Lord, refine me. Lord, refine me. But ain't nobody want the heat. You understand what refining is? Refining, what did I just do? This, what was this move? Listen, I preach with my body. Refining is intense heat, burning and stripping impurities out of gold. Sharpening, oh Lord, sharpen me. Sharpen me, oh God, I want to be a blade in the army of your kingdom. Everybody want to be sharpened, but nobody want friction. What is sharpening? Rough surface on rough surface, making a blade sharper. It's okay to have your faith messed with a little bit. Let it be more like clay in Play-Doh. Don't let it be a china cabinet that no one can look at. We're so quick to jump on pastors and preachers and other believers. We're like, I can't believe you said that. Just wrestle with it. Wrestle with it. Nobody's trying to tell you you're wrong. We're all here to sharpen each other. The body of believers. It's impossible for any human ever to get everything right always about the Bible. God is bigger than my brain is. We got to keep going, man. That take way too long on that. He's a shepherd worth trusting and following. And just because you're being asked to move forward from pain does not mean the enemy is trying to destroy you again. Please, please, church, do not fiercely guard the little faith that has been left in the rubble. Come and be redeemed and be healed in the presence and promise of your God. And maybe you're like, I have pursued healing and more devastation came. Great. He's still king. He's still king. And he knows your works. He knows you. Don't allow victimhood and self-preservation to become the guiding light for your life. Your emotions, your hurts are valid. They are real, and no one will take them away from you. But don't let fixating on my own pain excuse me from a willing submission and service to the King. Randy Smith says this, and no servant of God will ever be truly effective until God takes them through the necessary process of separating them from the default allegiance to self. And I think the harder life has been, the more I close out any other voice, and the more that allegiance to self is the prominent guiding light for my life. My faith is no longer tested. My faith is protected. I like it the way it is, and I can't deal with being hurt again. Church, not all discomfort is bad. Discomfort can be a very, very good thing. Let him open and close the doors as he pleases. Back to the letter, to the church in Philadelphia and to the angel of the church. The words of the Holy One, the true one, the one who has the key of David, who opens and no one will shut, who shuts and no one opens. I know your works. Behold, I've set before you an open door which no one is able to shut. I know that you have but little power, yet you've kept my word and not denied my name. Behold, I will make those of the synagogue of Satan who say that they're Jews and are not but lie. Behold, I will make them come bow before your feet, and they will learn that I have loved you. Because you've kept my word about patient endurance, I will keep you from the hour of trial that is coming on the whole world to try those who dwell on the earth. I'm coming soon. Hold fast to what you have. What you got to understand in talking to Philadelphia, hold fast to what you have. It doesn't mean find your valuables and protect them. It doesn't mean hold fast to what you have, like find the material things that you're like, okay, this is what's going to make life okay for us. Like, hold on. And then you start putting it up on the bookshelf in the china cabinet. Hold fast to what you have. And what you have is faith in the King of Kings, the one true King. Hold fast to your faith so that no one may seize your crown. The one who conquers, I will make him a pillar in the temple of my God. Never shall he go out of it. And I will write on him the name of my God and the name of the city of my God, the new Jerusalem, which comes down from God out of heaven, and my own new name. The emperor changed your name? Well, God knows your true name. An emperor didn't show up. Someone that was supposed to protect you didn't show up for you? God has never left you. Devastation is coming towards you because of someone else's decisions? Well, God knows your works and he knows your heart. Don't forget who the real King is. Oh, Philadelphia, you were meant to be a doorway for Hellenism? Well, John writes that you're actually a doorway for the gospel. Earthquakes destroyed your city time and time again. Well, God's temple will never be destroyed, and you will be made an eternal pillar in it. So for now, you may bend, but you will not break. Be steadfast in faith. Hold fast to the words of your King. He is holy, he is true, and he is for you. And he has the key of David. He can open and shut doors and bring you into places and spaces that no one else can. No deficiency, no devastation, no hurt, no hardship can ever keep you out. Hold fast to steadfastness. Don't use your pain to justify excusing yourself from the work of the Lord. Don't use your hurts to victimize yourself into becoming a rigid and bitter believer. Verse 11 and 12, I'm coming soon, hold fast. Skipping down, I'll make him a pillar in the temple of my God. Let's talk pillars. The entire Greek and Roman world were built up on these massive pillars. And those giant stone pillars, by the way, become exceptionally dangerous whenever you live in a place prone to earthquakes. But out of all the giant temples you've grown up seeing, I will place you as a pillar in God's temple. And that's just a cool moment where I want to go back into some Old Testament stuff. Let's talk about pillars for a minute. The pillars in the instructions of building Solomon's temple. Let's read through 2 Chronicles 3:15 real fast. For the front of the temple, He made two pillars that were 27 feet tall. Wow. Each topped by a capital extending upward another 7.5 feet. Double wow. He made a network of interwoven chains and used them to decorate the tops of the pillars. He also made, not a dozen, 100 decorative pomegranates and attached them to the chains. If you eat pomegranates, you're holier than those that don't. I'm kidding. It's not a doctrinal website statement. But also pomegranates do smack, like they're super good. Anyway, pomegranates on chains, big pillar. We're there. Okay. Then he set up the two pillars at the entrance of the temple, one to the south of the entrance, the other to the north. He named the one on the south Hakin and named the one on the north Boaz. So as you walk into the temple of God, there are two pillars, both with names, Hakin and Boaz. Hakin means he will establish. Boaz, with strength and power. So the first thing you're experiencing walking into the temple of God is the word that he will establish with strength and power. Why? Because what is established by his name is secured by his power. In Philadelphia, you've battled with what to call yourselves through the seasons of devastation and name changes. Well, now his name is the name that's written on you. You have been established by his name, and you have been secured by his power. And before you, he has set an open door to reveal his name to the rest of the world. What if the reputation of God at work in your life began to outshine any destruction you've ever faced? Show the world, not that you're happy, faking it, double-lived Christians, not that you're uptight, rigid church people and letting everybody know where you stand. Show the world that faith in Jesus lasts through it all and can never be destroyed. I got some implications. Number one, insignificance is something we feel. It is not who we are. It's something we feel. It is not who we are. Number two, hurting is not a joyful feeling. Amen? Amen. Yeah. Life sucks sometimes. It's you know what's tough is to be like happy, like biblical joy is not like skipping through the streets amidst trauma. I've been suppressing everything since I was 7. Woo! my whole family died, and it's just like that's not what anybody's expecting. But joy amidst pain comes from this divine, open-handed invitation to trust God over self. So take a new grip and hold fast. Number three. What Jesus opens, ain't nobody can shut. Let him do it. But it's our responsibility to let go of our need for control and remember that he alone holds the key. Number four, in the face of devastation, God's goodness is hard to see. But our identity is in his name. And what is established by his power under his name is forever secure, and nothing can take it away. You see these guys coming through. They're gonna pass out communion. And this is something we do every week at Southeast. And if you're comfortable in partaking in communion with us, we'd love to invite you online campus. You guys can go ahead and prepare what you've got. Man, can we just like sit with these thoughts as we prepare our hearts for communion? told you, vulnerability is hard because it's vulnerable. But man, it'd be so cool if we could be a church that's known for stepping into vulnerable places. We don't just attend, we pursue. Anyway. Take that bread with me. And on the night Jesus was betrayed, he took bread and he broke it. He said, "This is my body, which is broken for you. Whenever you eat this, do this in remembrance of me." Let's take it together. In the same way, he took wine. He said, "This is my blood, confirming the new covenant between God and his people. It's poured out as a sacrifice for you. Whenever you drink this, do it in remembrance of me." Let's take the cup. Holy Spirit, I just like plead to you that we would be people amidst our own devastation that would still rely on you. Kingdom logic over our own. Lord, that you alone can open and close, and may we be a doorway for what you want to do on the earth. Lord, I pray that you've spoken so loudly to the Southeast Christian family this morning. Help us respond to the word we heard today.